Hello, friends. Uncle Marv here with another episode of the IT Business Podcast, the show for IT professionals where we try to help you support your customers and run your networks better, smarter, and faster. Welcome to another audio show. And this show is presented to you by SuperOps, the future-ready, unified PSA and RMM platform that can help you empower your operations and supercharge your success. So I had such a great time with Rayanne Buccianico that I said, she's got to come back. We got to do a part two. And she said, yes. And here we are for part two of our MSP Money series. Rayanne, how are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Marv?
I am good. We should probably let people know that we have a pretty good life. We both live in Florida.
Well, you know, it's hard to complain when you live in paradise,
yes.
Right? It's like paradise all year long, except for perhaps the months of July and August, potentially even September. I would say August and September are probably the two worst months. Like, nobody wants to be here, not even us. But, you know, today it's March and the weather is beautiful. You know, we've got, it's the first day of spring and we've got this beautiful, you know, warm weather and the sun is shining. So yeah, life is pretty good
here. Yes, it is. And I will say that in terms of those months that you said people don't want to be here, I will always preface the summer months by saying, if your name is Stan, don't come down and complain that even the sand is too hot. He'll probably never hear this, so let's see how it goes. All right, well, Rayanne, I had you on a while back, and we talked about, you know, starting out, what things that an IT professional or MSP should know to get started on the right foot when it comes to their money. And we talked about, you know, obviously getting set up with the right accounting program, chart of accounts. We talked about goals and benchmarks. Today, I want to focus on the other side of that. And it's something that I thought about on a podcast I did a while back, where I came up with this idea that businesses should try to start with at least some framework of the end in mind. Because a lot of us just simply start the business because we either think we can do it better than our bosses, or because we don't want to work for a boss, or we think IT is a money tree, and that the money will always be there and we'll be fine. But people don't think about the end. And I thought, let me find somebody who can help us talk about the things we should plan for in our business to help us get ready for that end, whatever the end may be. So how do you feel about that as a topic?
Well, it's one of my favorite topics, actually, because, you know, I'm a numbers geek and I tend to plan for things, you know, and what's that old saying? If you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Right.
That's the one I was looking for. So, you know, even there's a great book, aside from the E-Myth that you were just describing, the entrepreneurial seizure that many people go through. But there's another great book. It's called Built to Sell, which, you know, helps put you in that mindset. Like, if I do this, what is it going to do to my company's, you know, future ability to sell this company to somebody else? You know, we're all human. We're not going to be here forever. I'm sorry to say, none of us are going to be here forever. At some point, we have to hand the reins off to the next person. And what do we want to get from our business before we hand those reins off? And I think that's what you're asking
about. Yes, yes. Although that Built to Sell book isn't that more of a framework of getting your business set up to run and survive without you? so that it becomes easier to sell if you're not the linchpin, right?
Well, if you're trying to sell your business, it has to be able to run without you. So it's very it's very relevant in that manner.
All right. So start us off here. What should we think about, whether we're in year one, year five, year 20, year 30, if we know that at some point we want this to end in a way that helps us out the best? What are some things we need to know?
The first thing that I'm going to say is you may have a day in your mind, right? Like, I want to retire, or I want to stop working in this business when I turn 60 years old. And I'm just picking a day, you know, or an age out of the air. Life is funny, right? Because sometimes you have plans and life has other plans for you, and you don't really know what those are. And, you know, so saying to yourself, I think I want to be out of this business by the time I'm age 60. And if you can make that happen at age 60, then you're one of the lucky ones. However, sometimes people get sick, right? People's spouses get sick, or their children get sick, or, you know, they have to help an aging parent, or any number of things can pull you, you know, life priorities can pull you out of your business prematurely. And here's a perfect example. One of my clients, just last summer, when I spoke with him, I spoke with him about 2 years ago, and, you know, and I said, "Hey, Jim, you know, you're, when are you looking to exit your business?" Right? Because he was getting older, and his partner had just retired. And he says, "Oh, I'm going to be here for at least another 5 or 6 years." Right? Fast forward to last summer, when he went into total liver failure, ended up being in the hospital for 8 weeks until they found a donor to, you know, and of course you can't live without a liver, hence the name. So they had to find a person who had donated their organs that was a match for his liver so that, you know, he could survive. And survive he did, thank goodness. But the business had to go, right? He couldn't go back to work after that. And so it was a rush trying to find somebody willing to buy the business, you know, and take over and so on and so forth, right? So, so having a plan is a great idea, but making sure that your business is ready to go at a moment's notice, you know, and running your business that way all the time, is going to make it that much easier. And I didn't mean to start your podcast with it sounded like a sad story, but really it was a happy story because Jim survived.
Right. But I mean, but that's the way that we should think, because I mean, another example could have been COVID. You know, a lot of people shuttered their doors during COVID because of one reason or another. They, you know, their clients couldn't go to work, so they didn't have anything to do and couldn't get paid. Some of them either chose not to do the loans or got a loan, but it didn't suffice for the period of time. So you're right that we need to not just think of it as, hey, this far off date in the future, I'll be ready. We might not be ready.
You might be ready a lot faster than that, you know, through no fault of your own. And the more ready that you are when that happens, you know, the easier it's going to be to find somebody to come and take over your business, and the easier it will be to hit your number. Like, we all have a number in our head. Like, you know, tell me, Marv, you've never woken up and said, if somebody offered me X number of dollars, you know, I just might sell this thing today.
My number is 4.7 mil.
Okay, right? That's a very specific number.
It is.
But, you know, it's good to have that in your, you know, in the back of your mind, so that, you know, hey, if you want somebody to pay you that much money for your business at some point in the future, you have to make sure that you can say that my business is worth $4.7 million and this is why, and be and have the documentation ready to show them that this business is worth that. And if it, and if you can't prove it to yourself that it's worth $4.7 million, good luck proving that to a buyer, right? Because nobody's going to hand you $4.7 million just because that's the number that you want, right? It has to be worth it to them. They've got to be able to make money off of that.
Right. So it sounds like the first thing you should do is not only think about when, if you're able to be lucky enough to do that, but think about the number. So my question is, you know, I threw that number up because I've got a whole nother plan of if I were to hit the lottery and I wanted to do, you know, X number of things, give money away to family, blah, blah, blah. That's the number that I would have to start with and then whittle it down to what my real number is. But how do people come up with a realistic number when it comes to their business?
And that's a really great question. You know, one of the things as I do valuations and I help MSPs, you know, prepare themselves for an exit, or I walk them through, you know, I handhold them through an entire, transaction. So many times I see MSPs or even just any old business, any type of business owner, because they've poured their heart and soul and blood, sweat and tears into their business over the last 30 years, they expect that they should get X number of dollars in return for it. And the problem that, and I don't know that it's really a problem, but it's just that the buyer or the acquiring company, you know, is only looking at the numbers and the potential for the return on their investment. They're not looking at the blood, sweat, and tears and, you know, the years of eating, you know, Franks and beans for dinner because you were trying to make sure that you had enough money to cover payroll on Friday, right? So there's the acquiring company has one vision, and it has absolutely nothing to do with your retirement plan. When you're looking to plan your exit and you say to yourself, I need to come up with a number. I don't know, you know, what my business is worth. There's a number of ways that you can do that. And you're going to hear a lot of buzzwords out there in the community. You know, you're going to hear multiples of EBITDA, and you're going to hear, you know, stock transactions versus asset-based type of transactions, and a lot of really confusing, you know, words and things that you're just like, I'm not sure that even makes any sense to me. So what I kind of want to do, Marv, if it's okay, I just want to walk you through a couple of simple steps, you know, to one, understand the valuation process.
Okay.
What does EBITDA mean, and why are people so, you know, so concerned about it? And what is this thing they call a multiple?
All right, because I was going to ask you that, so I'm glad that was your plan.
Perfect. Okay, so if you're talking about valuing your business, and you can contact a CPA, you know, you can give us a call if you'd like, whatever, doesn't matter. But there's a number of theories for valuing a business. And often you're going to hear the word EBITDA, right? It stands for earnings before interest, dividend, interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And so what does that mean? Now, in our last conversation, Marv, we were talking about the chart of accounts and setting up the chart of accounts so that it's nice and easy to read your financial. One of the things that you could do, super simple, thing that you could do to your chart of accounts is look at your expenses section. And if you see amortization, depreciation, and interest expense sitting in the expense section, go into and adjust the account and change it to an other expense, right? So if it's just sitting in there as a regular expense, a simple change to turn it into other expense, and then your P&L, when it comes out of your accounting system, you're going to see your income, your cost of goods sold, your expenses, and then what's called net operating income. And then below that, you'll see your amortization, your depreciation, and your interest expense. So you can look at that net operating income and come relatively close to what is your EBITDA number. Now, if you're in a state like California that pays, you know, state income taxes on your business, you might want to take that income tax line and put that down into other expenses too, because income taxes is the T in EBITDA.
Okay.
And that's interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So the net operating income, in an oversimplified fashion, there's other things like if you run your personal car payments through your business, right? That's what's called a net to owner. And we want to move that out because that's not going to go to your car, isn't going to go to the buyer. You know, also some, you know, maybe your retirement plan. Once your salary gets removed from, you know, from the company's books, so does your retirement plan. So that's another benefit to owner. And we're going to remove that from the whole EBITDA discussion as well. And there's add backs and there's blah, blah, blah.
Right. So looking at a traditional P&L where people will see your net at the very bottom, that number, I don't want to say you ignore it, but you have to factor it in with the EBITDA when you're trying to look at a valuation of your business.
Correct. That's one of the valuation methods, right? There's lots of other valuation methods, and I'll touch on a couple of those. But since the EBITDA number is one of the most popular ones, you want, a lot of people like to focus on that. And so here's a little tip that you can do. If you start this today and every month, you know how you look at your P&L every month?
Yeah.
And if you take that net operating income every month and you put it into a spreadsheet, January's net operating profit was this, and February's net operating profit was that, and March and April and so on, and watch the trend and make sure that that number goes up every month. And if it starts to go down or dip, you know, now your EBITDA number is going in the wrong direction and it's getting you farther and farther away from your goal. So if you've got that goal in, and there's a number of discussions about multiples. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yeah, and you're right. All of this stuff has just kind of, I mean, I'm sorry, my eyes kind of roll back in my head because it's weird because we talked about net income. I was going to ask you, retained earnings was a thing that was talked about for a lot of years. And how recent is this EBITDA term come about?
Well, the earnings before interest in taxes and depreciation and amortization. This concept has been around a long, long time. Only recently in the M&A craze, I would say in the last 10 years is when, you know, people really started to, you know, lean heavily on this EBITDA number. And why? Because it was the easiest one to describe on stage.
Okay.
So, right, like there's so many different valuation methods, and if you need short sound bites, let's talk about EBITDA and let's talk about multiples of EBITDA and how many multiples can you get? And I heard one guy say, oh, I got one of my clients 15 times his EBITDA number. And I was like, really, what was his EBITDA number? Like $50,000? You know, like, what are we talking about? And why? Why was this one company worth 15 times and this other company is only worth 4 times, right? So there has to be a reason for these, you know, wide variances. And I promise you it has absolutely nothing to do with the consultant that you're talking to.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So once you establish EBITDA and you kind of get a handle on it, how does multiples play a part in it? Because it's almost as if people are just throwing out, well, I'm going to try to get 5x my EBITDA. But is there an actual calculation, or is there an actual way to, you know, figure out what a true multiple is?
That is a fabulous question. And the sad answer is no, there is no calculation. The reality is, Marv, is that a business is worth exactly what somebody is willing to pay for, right? Not a penny more. And the purpose of a multiple is the, it's a term that's called synergies. You have a company and you're looking to sell your company, and your company does something that another company desperately wants or needs. You're in a particular market. You sell a particular product. You have a particular vertical that you focus on. You know, there's and this company needs to, because of what they do, they need to get into your market or sell your product or, you know, hire your specialized team, you know, that is well-versed in this vertical that they're trying to break into. And so they, you know, as they looked at these synergies, right, and there's earnings synergy, right? You're bringing them new revenues that they can't get without buying your company. And then there's cost synergies. If they buy your company and they get your revenue, they can also cut their costs because, you know, you use this tool, and, or they can, they're finding ways to save money because you pay your people less than they pay their people, or you use the same tools that they'll be able to leverage more to produce more of their services or their products. And so so when you're talking about a multiple, a lot of these things come straight down to what does your company have to offer the buyer? And how badly does that buyer want it or need it to accomplish their goals? And so that multiple is a premium. They are paying you a premium for your today's value based on what they believe this company can do in the next 3 years. And so that's the whole point of these multiples.
Okay. Now, how much of a factor is a positive cash flow play into all of this?
Huge.
Okay.
So there is a separate valuation method. It's called the discounted cash flow. And what we do with that is we take a look at the trend of cash flow over 3 years and how cash is being managed in the business over 3 years. And then we take the growth in cash over 3 years, and then we apply a discount to it, right? And then we forecast what that cash will look like, well, a year from now, 2 years from now, and 3 years from now. And that also builds its own value of the business independent completely independent of EBITDA, earnings, and all of that, right? It's a completely separate valuation method. But any firm that's doing a valuation of your company is going to use at least 3, if not 4 valuation methods, because no one should hold more weight than the other. Mm. Does that make sense?
It does.
Because if your cash flow is in the tank and your earnings are through the roof, right? You're missing a piece of the puzzle.
Right.
So
which means something might be wrong in the books.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so you get your number, you try to figure out how to, you know, make the number work with EBITDA, discounted cash flow, all these things. But let me ask, because if you're just starting out, this may not be something to focus on in the beginning, right?
I would agree.
Okay.
Right? Focus on sales, focus on growth, right? And don't worry, let's not focus on the exit yet.
Now, is it something to think about once you've kind of matured in your company, even though you might not have that end date in mind? You know, if we say, or is there a period, say, like if you know you're going to try to exit in 5 to 10 years, is that a time to start making everything work?
If you've got an exit plan of between 5 and 10 years from today, start today.
Okay.
Right? Like right away, because the longer your trends are showing a positive trend, you know, the longer that you can prove that you've been on this right path, then the more valuable your company is going to be. There's a lot of things that a lot of the intangible stuff that really adds value to a company. Having your books in order, having a clean set of financials that actually match your tax returns, and having, you know, documented procedures, internal standard operating procedures, both of how to run your company and how to provide service delivery to your clients, having those things documented, having all of your corporate records in order, as silly as it sounds, your corporate book, your annual minutes, you know, of the shareholder meetings and all of those things, people ask for them. What about the payroll records and the benefits that you pay your people? Are they documented? Do you have a handbook for your employees, right? All of these things may sound, oh, like, I don't need this. There's only 5 of us here. Well, 5 turns into 10 quickly, and 10 turns into 25 quickly. And now you have a big fat mess on your hands because nobody has any clue how much vacation they're due this year. So... And if you think I'm kidding, take a look at ABC Solutions. We were at 4 people before the beginning of the pandemic, and we are now at 20. The time that it takes to grow from 5 to 20 is staggeringly fast, and it will get away from you. So start while you're small and organize while you're small. And keep it organized, and you're going to have a smooth running company that everybody is going to want to buy at some point in the future.
All right. You made a comment about the books that I wanted to ask you about. Keeping a clean set of books. What exactly does that mean? Because to me, it means keeping track of the receipts, making sure everything is put in the proper place in your accounting package, and that you can look at your books at any given time and know exactly where you are. Is it really that simple?
It really can be that simple. And I say that it can be because as small business owners, we're all guilty from time to time of pushing personal expenses through the company account, right? You're at the grocery store, you're buying groceries for the family, and I don't think I have enough money in my personal account. Here, let me just use the company's card, for that and you pay for it. And then you push it through shareholder distributions or owner's draw when it hits the bank feed. That's fine. But if you're doing that all day, you know, if you're doing that all year long, hundreds of times, then now all of a sudden you have a bunch of personal expenses running through the business books. And when somebody comes in to take a look at your books, they're seeing how much money you spend at the grocery store and how much money you spend at the clothing store and, you know, and what toys you bought your kids for Christmas from Amazon, because everything is running through the business. Pay yourself a salary. Get your personal expenses out of the business books, right? Like, you just don't need that kind of noise interfering with your cash flow, because it will affect your cash flow. It may not affect your P&L because you're pushing it through owner's draw, but it is still draining the bank accounts, and it's going to reflect poorly on your statement of cash flows that you're taking all of the profits out of the company to buy toys on Amazon.
All right. So we're going to get sidetracked. It's not your fault. It's me, because in my head, I'm thinking, okay, so we just had a couple of events here where we had some work done at the office. We had some work done at the house, and I do everything I can to keep expenses separate. And the person that was doing the work was like, well, can you pay me more from your business, because you'll get a tax write-off, blah, 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 and I'll get this. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. But this idea that we as small business owners or people that are solopreneurs run as much as you can through the business, I don't like it. But I don't ever have a good reason to say don't do it. You're giving one where it says, look, you don't want to run everything through there, because if you're going to have somebody look at your books later and they see all of these personal things running through the business, it's going to throw up a red flag. So where do you draw the line to gain the benefits of running stuff through your business and not muddying up the waters?
I'm going to share a personal experience with you. When my company was like super small, there was less than five of us. I was literally working out of the house. I didn't even have an office for a number of years. And so I separated the house, TV cable, the cable television and the household internet, because I wanted the high speed, you know, super powered business standard internet because we were working. I had a server in the house, like the whole bit.
Okay.
Then I moved out and got an office, but I kept the business class internet at the house because often I would still work from home, even though I had an office. And so I allowed the company to continue to pay that bill. Now, today I have a whole office building, and I'm almost never working from home anymore. And now I'm starting to feel like, okay, it's no longer appropriate for the company to pay, you know, the utility bills for the house and the internet bills for the house. It had to get separated. Like, I had to move all of that stuff over to my personal account. And it was a very conscious decision. Like, I'm not using this for business anymore, and I don't want it bringing down my profitability. Now, that's me. There are plenty of people out there that have a business and are perfectly happy running what's called a lifestyle business, where they have zero interest in making a profit and they just want to enjoy life and have the business cover as many of those expenses as possible. And they can get away with it for years and years and years, right? A minimal profit at the end of the year, and, you know, and have the business cover a bunch of things, and that's fine until someday that they start thinking, huh, I'm beginning to get on now, and I might want to sell this thing in a few years. Maybe I should start taking my business seriously and separating the business expenses from the personal expenses, so that maybe you join a peer group and your peers are saying, wait a minute, your profitability is all wrong. How come I'm making 20% and you're making 2, right? What are you doing wrong? And so if you're in one of those accountability groups, and there's plenty of them out there, and you start measuring yourself against your peers, then, now what you want is you want to show your company in the best light possible, because aren't we all gamers at heart?
Right? Well, actually, I'm not a gamer, but I get what you're saying. And that's why I wanted to ask, because I think from the perspective that from the beginning, I've always separated out as much as possible. And I know that there are a lot of people who don't. And when they get to the point where they're thinking that, you know what, now's a great time to sell. M&A companies are all out there, you know, venture capitalists, they're coming after us, I'm going to sell. And then they get the number, and it's way lower than what they think because of stuff like this, right?
That's exactly why the number is lower. And, you know, you can explain to them all day long. I run my personal car and, you know, through the business, and I'm leasing my Tesla, and that's why my auto expenses are at $85,000 a year or whatever. But the buyers don't want to hear that, right? Like, because you know what they're hearing? I'm a dishonest business person. Come and pay me a lot of money for my company. And that's not what they're looking for either. So, and I always say, which one of these people do you want to be? Do you want to be the successful business owner, or do you want to be the person who doesn't pay any income tax? Because you cannot be both.
Mm. Interesting. All right. Well, sorry to sidetrack you there, but I just, this clean books thing is important in my mind, that you want to do that as early on as possible.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Right. And it's good to get in. It's good to get into those habits as early as you can inside your business, right? Because once, and I always tell people, put yourself on payroll, get used to receiving that paycheck every 2 weeks or twice a month, because you will get used to it, and then you will come to rely on it. And that's a good thing for your business and for, keeping like this separation of church and state, right? You just want to keep them, keep your home at home, keep your work at work.
All right. So I apologize for taking us off track there. How far did I get you from your list?
We talked about the different valuation numbers, but let's talk about that. What's your number?
Okay.
Right. Like, because we started with the what's your number, and that's where we got lost. When you're thinking about how much can I sell my business for? Because let's say that you have a number of 1.5 million in your head, and somebody comes along and they say, I'm not willing to give you 1.5, but I might be willing to give you 1.2. And so you're looking at that number and you're like, that's still over $1 million. I think I might like to do that. Now, let's talk about what is going to happen to that $1.2 million. One, they're going to probably hold a minimum of 20% back in escrow, for just in case some of your clients decide to jump ship in the first year. So you'll get that at some point in the future. So let's talk about $1 million, at the time of selling the business. Do you have any debt on the books? Credit cards? I know a lot of MSPs that run their businesses on credit cards, and they keep revolving balances. So, you're paying interest, which that's a whole nother conversation. Marv will talk about that some other day.
Okay.
interest is, you know, public enemy number one. But anyway, so if you have any credit card debt, you're going to need to use those the proceeds to pay that off. Do you have vehicle loans? What about the EIDL loan from the SBA? You're going to need to pay that off. Excuse me. You're going to need to pay that off. When you sell your business, you have to pay the SBA back. And that's the federal government. Believe me, they know how to find you. So, you know, are there any other loans or things that you owe? Is there any other debt on the books? And that's why the balance sheet is so important, because it's going to show you all of the things that you owe in that business. And that retained earnings number, that's important because that's what is left for you. And so those distributions that we were just talking about, all of the personal expenses that you run through, or, you know, I've seen other people that take $24,000 in salary and $80,000 in distributions because they think they're saving themselves money on Social Security tax. Well, that $80,000 in distributions is reducing your basis in the company. So when you sell your company, you have to pay tax on the gain, right? If you have no basis and you sell your company for $1 million, guess what? You are paying tax on all $1 million. And it may be capital gains tax, which is the only thing that's going to save you, but it's still a lot of money, right? 20% of $1 million is still a lot of money.
Right.
So, you know, so if you leave some, you know, if you're not taking those distributions, then your retained earnings number, and the retained earnings is the earnings, it's accumulated earnings of the business year over year that has not been withdrawn from the company. And then also you reduce the retained earnings but dollar for dollar for the distributions or the personal money that you've taken out outside of payroll. And that becomes, in an oversimplified manner, your basis, right? What do I mean by basis? If you go to the stock market, go to your favorite brokerage house, and you buy 10 shares of Microsoft stock for $300, right? Here's $3,000. I'm paying $300 per share. And then a year from now, you sell it at $400 per share, and you get $4,000 in proceeds. Well, it cost you $3,000, so that you're only paying tax. You're only paying tax on the $1,000 of gain. That's how basis works, right? So you put money in, and then when you sell it, right, it reduces your gain so that you're not paying tax on the full amount. Same thing happens in a small business corporation. You put money in, and then if you don't take that money out, the earnings, the income from the company at the end of the year turns into retained earnings, and that's going to increase your basis. You take money out, that's going to decrease your basis. You have a bad year and your company loses money, decrease in basis, right? You take money from your savings account and contribute it to the company to cover payroll, increase in basis, right? So it's a constant moving target of, you know, when the company earns money, basis goes up, company loses money, basis goes down. You put money in, basis goes up, you take money out, basis goes down. And so we're tracking that so that when you sell, you're only paying tax on the amount above your basis. Did that make any sense?
So it makes sense, except for this question I'm going to throw at you.
Okay.
Is that a number that we want to keep as high as we can for that sole purpose of when it comes time to exit or sell? What is the purpose of retained earnings? Because for a long time, I thought, oh, well, that's just money I'm going to pay myself when it's all said and done. But I don't.
It is money that you will pay yourself.
Okay.
And I've actually, I worked with one particular person. Excuse me. I worked with one person, and And there, he had a plan, a 2-year plan. I need to sell this thing in 2 years. I'm getting burned out. I need to go. And immediately I said, stop taking distributions, because he was pulling a bunch of cash out of the business. Anytime the company made a dollar, he was taking 50 cents, right? Like he just kept pulling the money. I said, stop taking your distributions. Let's beef up that basis so that when you do sell it, you know, it'll reduce the amount of tax you pay. And sure enough, that's exactly what ended up happening. When he sold the company, he had like $400,000 in basis because he stopped taking distributions for 2 years. So it's one of those things that you can plan as you're getting closer, right? You don't have to store all of your net profits into retained earnings. But a couple of other things that it does do, it increases your net worth on the balance sheet. It will, if you're not taking the cash out of the business, now you have cash in the business that you can invest in other things that the business needs, new equipment, you know, an improvement in the infrastructure. You know, there's all sorts of like, I tend to stick it in a savings account. I call it strategic spending, right? These are things that, you know, my leadership team and I, you know, we look at what are the things that we need to improve what we do. Do we need to invest in new technologies? Do we need to invest, you know, in fix up the kitchen in the office, or, you know, whatever, strategic spending money. But it's something that I won't have to go and borrow money for. You know, it's already there for us to use.
All right. So that helps. But again, how high do we want that number to go? I mean, is there a point in time where it begins to backfire, I guess is the question.
There is. There is. You probably, as an S corporation, you don't pay, the S corporation itself doesn't pay tax, right? The earnings from the S corp, it's a pass-through. It passes down to the shareholders. However, there's a blurb in the Internal Revenue Code called Accumulated Earnings and Profits Tax. It's a 20% tax on S corporations that keep too much money in their retained earnings. So if you stockpile your earnings, then the IRS thinks that you're trying to avoid payroll taxes. So it's going to assess an excise tax of 20%, and it's called the accumulated earnings and profits tax. And so when your net prof or when your retained earnings exceeds a number, and I want to say that it starts looking a little suspicious when you're at about $250,000, but that's very subjective based on the size of your company, right? Like if you have, you know, a company that's grossing $20 million a year, you know, then they can't expect you to take all of that out except for $250,000, right? So I'm sure that the IRS has their own algorithms that they use to say, oh, you've got too much in profits before they start calling you out on it. But it is a concern.
Okay. I won't throw my numbers out on air, but my account has made a comment about, you know, taking some money out. And
right.
I always wondered what the number was. So anyway, let's talk about.
It's good to leave some money in, but you don't need to leave it all in.
Okay.
Right? You work hard. Take your money.
Okay. All right. And so what's your number? So yeah, everybody needs to know the number and of course how to juggle all of these different metrics between EBITDA, retained earnings, your basis. Now the basis, that's not just retained earnings, right? That's a combination of some other stuff too.
It is. It's a combination of additional paid in capital, capital contributions, loans to and from the company. And actually the IRS has required that all shareholders or partners of pass-through entities begin to report their basis. So your accountant is reporting it to the IRS because they they want to track it now.
Ugh. All right, I got to pay more attention to my accountant.
I promise that they are doing it for you, whether you know it or not.
All right. Okay, so a lot of good information there. Is there anything that I glossed over or we took too much of a left turn to talk about?
We always take left turns,
yes,
right?
Yes.
In Albuquerque, I think. But so keep in mind, one, keep your books simple and clean. Keep your, personal life personal. Keep your work life at work. And review your numbers on a regular basis. Today, your number may be $1 million, but 5 years from now, it may be $4 million. Always know, what your number is. And, and if there's any part of your business that feels like you don't have a solid handle on it, like I just have this one thing over here, and I keep ignoring it because I don't really know what to do with it. Stop ignoring it. Pay attention to it. Ask somebody, right? Get a handle on every aspect of your business so that there's no surprises.
All right. Let me ask the one last question for somebody who already is at the point where it's time for them to exit. And they did not do any of these things. And they're just like, how can I maximize my number even though I didn't pay any bit of attention to EBITDA or retained earnings or net or blah, blah, blah? How quickly can somebody make themselves attractive when it comes to selling?
I don't know that there's a quick and easy answer to that. But if somebody came to me and said those things, my first inclination would be, let's see if we can find somebody interested in buying your accounts, mm-hmm. right? Let's not try to sell the business. Let's try to sell the customers. And because maybe somebody will come along and say, oh, I can do something with these customers. You may not get top dollar, because you're not selling the whole business, but it might, if you're in a hurry, right? Like my wife is dying and I need to sell my business right now because she needs me and I need to be there for her, right? Because life priorities always take precedence over the business. So you're just going to say, all right, I will never recommend to anybody. Don't let any buyer know that you are anxious to sell this thing tomorrow, because they're going to smell a fire sale and they're going to lowball you. At all times, remain calm, cool, and do your best to provide, whatever information that they look for. You may have to scramble in order to dig it out of your accounting system and clean it up at the last minute, but always do your best. That's all we can do.
All right. Well, Rayanne, just like we thought, we talked a lot. but I'm glad because this is an extensive topic to some degree. It's not something that you can just, sit and listen to a 30-minute sitcom and have all the answers, right?
Right.
So, all right, folks, you have heard it. And thank you very much, Rayanne, for coming and sharing these tidbits with us. And again, hopefully you're not listening to the shows out of order and you listen to our other show. I believe it's number 612, where we talked about, the things to do at the start of your business. And today, all the things to plan for the end of your business. And I guess you mentioned it, the simplest things to do, keep the books clean.
And does that mean that this episode is number 613?
No.
No? Okay.
Why? Does that have any significance?
Oh, it does. But it's It's no big deal. Last June 13th of last year is when I donated a kidney to a very sick friend. So,
well, I can make it 6/13 in honor of that. So that was, I remember I saw you, just after that, and you were putting on a brave face out in public, and you probably should have been home resting.
Right. That was 9 days after surgery. There was no way I was missing that event, though. It was like right in St. Petersburg, and I was going to be there. Yep. So, and there I was. I didn't stay all day, but I did manage to make it out.
Yep, you were good. It was good to see you out and about and glad everything went well. So, yes. Yeah, so 6/13, that will be the number for this episode. And I'll come up with the title here pretty quickly as we get it out. But Rayanne Buccianico, ABC Solutions, LLC, on the west side of the state of Florida where the sand is white. The waves are small, and the sunset is always fantastic.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. That's going to do it, folks. And I thank you for downloading the show and listening and hope that you will continue to do so. Head over to itbusinesspodcast.com and put us in your podcatcher. And you will hear more from great people that I bring on. And apparently, Rayanne and I have a couple more shows we will do here soon. Interest. Is Public Enemy Number One. That's a title I have here. So we'll figure out when we can do that a little bit later. Maybe when I come and see you over on the west side, we can do that.
Perfect. Love that.
All righty. All right, folks, that's going to do it. We'll see you soon. And until next time, holla.